Here's Higdon. It sits up nicely for Michael Higdon. And what a start for Motherwell. But here's Malt, and he goes for it for Son. Magnificent Malt. Stephen Robinson celebrates. Motherwell, two up. Could that be the goal that puts him into the Betfred Cup final?
He's got Irwin. The supporting links from Ainsworth on the angle. Lionel Ainsworth fires home.
It's Lasley deep into stoppage time. Up goes Sutton. No foul given. Kerr. And Reid is there to knock it in. The goal is given. Hesitation for Craig Reid, who scores his first ever goal in senior football. And what a moment for Motherwell.
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself and Andy are delighted to welcome along the man who opened the scoring in our 1991 Scottish Cup final triumph and turned out over 50 times in claret and amber. Ian Ferguson, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
No, you're welcome, Andy. It's been a long time, obviously, since that Cup final, but still fresh in the memory, thankfully. You know what I mean? Even at my age, so nice to talk to you.
I'm looking forward to talking about it. But we'll start off with just a more generic question. It's obviously been a very difficult time for so many people in recent times. How's yourself and the family doing after what has been such a mad 18 months?
No, doing very well. I'm fortunate. I've had a job for the last 3 years in residential childcare. Dougie Bell, actually, who played with Aberdeen, is one of the managers here and got me the job, alongside Bobby Russell, who just retired from it. Bobby was doing it for a while as well. So we've been out and about, so I've not been confined to the house as much as other people. So in that respect, I've managed to continue with some sort of normality, if you can call it normality, that at least I wasn't confined to the house. I was going out to work, and we were in frontline duty with some kids and stuff, which is a very rewarding job. So it kept me busy, kept me sane, I suppose, and it meant that I wasn't confined to my house like most other people. So thankfully, we've been okay.
Fantastic stuff. And now we're going to rewind the clock back quite a few years, and you were born in Newt Hill and spent your youth career at Fir Park Boys Club. Was there any other names that we may recognise that came through the youth ranks with yourself?
Well, again, I played with the boys club. I think Coyste might have played with the team underneath. He was a year, I think he's a couple of days younger than me, but I played a year above him with the boys club. I'm sure he was in the team below me at Fir Park, but Gary McAllister went to school with me. Gary, I'm sure, played with Fir Park Boys Club as well, but not in the same team. So again, there was a few different players who started their career there, and again, it was the same as myself. I played with the boys club, but didn't sign for Motherwell. I ended up going to Dundee. So there was a few boys who came through the ranks in that Fir Park Boys Club, but obviously it was just really attached to Motherwell with name, not really much else, to be perfectly honest.
You got signed for Dundee under Tommy Gemmell and Willie Wallace, two massive figures within the Scottish game. That's quite a start to life as a professional footballer.
Well, it was great. I mean, I look back in it now and you think about how the kids come through now and they get the facilities that they've got, the different bits and pieces that they've got training-wise, and we didn't really have that. When I started with Dundee, Davy White, believe or not, signed me for Dundee when I was 13. On my 13th birthday outside Fir Park in the Dundee team bus, because I'd been offered to Motherwell and Ian St John was the manager at the time and he thought I was too young. So Dundee had been coming to my house for about a year. I signed under Davy White when he was the manager at Dundee outside Fir Park. But when I went full time, I'd just turned 17. I went up there in July and I was 17 in the August. And I was lucky enough, there was only two boys started that year. And Tommy Gemmell was the manager, Willie Wallace was the coach, alongside Hugh Robertson, who was a fantastic coach and football player. He played with Dunfermline, I'm sure, in the first cup for Dunfermline, and very, very good coach. And yeah, I was lucky enough to break into the team quite soon. I was only 17. I broke in before the turn of the year and made my debut for Dundee and had two Lisbon Lions as such, Tommy Gemmell and Willie Wallace as manager and coach. So it was a great experience.
6 years at Dundee, and after that you would move to Ibrox to join a Rangers side managed by Jock Wallace. And you had a fair impact there. He scored the winning goal in the 1984 League Cup final and the double against Inter Milan at Ibrox.
Yeah.
I know as fans of provincial clubs, we don't see the attraction to go and join either one of the big two or the so-called big two in Scotland, but you're moving from Dundee and you're getting an opportunity to play against the likes of Inter Milan under the light of a European night, massive occasion.
Well, again, I was the record signing at that time. It was one of the first transfers that went free my contract, and there was a tribunal who set a fee, and it did break a record between two Scottish teams. And at the time, I was only 21, so I have to laugh now and again when I hear that these young boys at 23 and 24 are needing to be babied into the team. I'm thinking, hang on, I'd went to Dundee from Dundee Rangers when I was 21. And had the pressure of being the record signing and gelling into the club quickly. And Jock Wallace had come back for his second stint at the club. And again, the team was, I wouldn't say they were struggling. We didn't struggle to begin with. When I first joined Rangers, we actually won the Gold Cup, as it was called, then the League Cup. I was lucky enough to score the only goal in the game against Dundee United at hand into a full house. And again, we get knocked out by Inter Milan, but we played against them in the UEFA Cup and we managed to beat them 3-1 at Ibrox, which was a great night. But it was also John McClellan's last game for Rangers. He had wanted X amount of money for a 3-year deal and they declined to give him that. And John went to Watford and I'm quite sure his reputation at Watford is exceptional. He went down there and starred for them and was down there for a number of years. But we seemed to sort of nosedive a wee bit when John left. And there was a lot of younger players coming into the team. Myself, Ali McCoy, Bobby Williamson, Nicky Walker. We were all round about the same sort of age. And we did okay, but not to the standards that Rangers required at the time. So it was a difficult period, but I'm delighted to have said that I managed to play for Rangers as well. And again, scoring the only goal in a cup final, that's what we all dream about doing when we're a kid. So I managed to achieve that and I was only about 21 or 22. So it was a good experience. Loved my time there for a couple of years and don't regret a thing. So it was an interesting time. Maybe not the best time to go there, but there's never a bad time to sign for a team like Rangers or Celtic.
You mentioned Bobby Russell earlier on that you clearly kept in contact with him after the game. You must have made some kind of lifelong relationships there at the time because there was a few players that you would go on to play with later on in your career, both at Fir Park and elsewhere, thinking, you know, as well as Bobby, maybe Craig Patterson would have been there at the same time and obviously Davy Cooper as well. Must have been an enjoyable time there, you know, with players of that kind of calibre. And
yeah, it was great. I mean, obviously, Bobby was every one of those players that you mentioned, Craig, great captain, great centre-half. Davey was just a one-off, a wonderful player and a good friend, sadly missed. And Bobby was just a fantastic footballer, great football brain, played the game simply and very, very well. And I was lucky enough to play with him at both Rangers and Motherwell. And again, you make friends, but you move on. We go from club to club and again, if we ever meet each other, meet up with each other, it's as if you've never been away and everybody's got a friendly gesture and a handshake and it's nice to see you, even although you might not bump into these fellas on a regular basis. But footballers have a unique bond and even some players who... I bumped into Peter Grant 2 weeks ago. Now, Peter and me used to have a wee kick at each other in the park and have a wee bit of a verbals when we were playing, but the loveliest man. I mean, we walked in each other. I hadn't seen him for about 10 years. I'd met him in Marbella before. Met him in Great Western Road a couple of weeks ago. And the first thing we did was, how are you doing? Give each other a big cuddle. And we stood and spoke about the old days for about 10, 15 minutes, which was great. And it's a unique bond, I think, that the majority of footballers, even although you might not play in the same team, we all have respect for each other. And we all did a good job and we enjoyed it. And we mixed well off the park as well as we kicked lumps to each other on the park. So it was, again, just a unique thing to be a footballer at that time. And even although you do make friends, you tend to move on after 2 or 3 years or for whatever reason. You always keep them as friends, but maybe not keep in touch with them as much as you would like.
Talk about big characters. The rival of Graeme Souness brought to an end your time at Ibrox, but there's a story about a nutmeg there just before you go.
Again, I was the first player that Graeme Souness sold. I don't take it as an insult. I took it as a backhanded compliment because he was trying to sell everybody. The first message that Walter Smith said to everybody in the dressing room when he took over was everybody in the club was up for sale apart from David Cooper. So it was a clear out. They were going to have a clear out. And they had a revolving door, really, at Ibrox with players coming in and out. And I was the first player that was sold. And I was sold to Dundee United. After knocking them back twice, I said no twice because I'd obviously I'd played with Dundee for so long. I didn't think it was the right move, but at the end of the day, it turned out to be a great move and something that I had to think about long and hard before I did it. But again, I realised that my time at Rangers was probably up. And to get a game and get back to playing regular football, bear in mind at this time, I think I was probably only 23, maybe 24. And I'd not been playing regular football with Rangers for at least a year in and out the team. So it was an opportunity to leave, even although the Terry Butchers and Chris Woods and people along those lines were walking into the dressing room and Graham himself. I mean, you want to know the nutmeg story. I mean, I did nutmeg on there. I used to have a thing in the morning called Toro, which some two boys in the middle. And when he came running at me, I put it through his legs. But he gave me a sort of dirty look. But I don't think he would know who I was, though. So it's not really a big thing. He didn't kick lumps out me. I didn't do anything. He just wasn't very pleased. But nobody likes getting nutmegged. But it was one of the things I was reasonably good at. So I don't think that was the reason I get sold. I think it was... just circumstance, and it was my time to leave, and it proved that because I left and went on to different clubs and had reasonably good success at most of them.
Certainly did when you moved on. The fee stands out for me as well, just looking back at your career, £145,000 to Dundee United. Dundee United would never dream of spending that amount of money on a player just now, and we're so far removed from that situation. But my God, did you not go on and prove your worth?
Well,
a winning goal at the Nou Camp and then the semi-final victory in the UEFA Cup as well.
Yeah, I think, in all honesty, it took me a wee while to agree to sign for Dundee United. I got a phone call. I went back on loan to Dundee. Robert Fleck had had a chance to go to Dundee on loan. And he knocked it back. Now, Jockey Scott, who I'd played with at the tail end of his career at Dundee, had become the Dundee manager. And whilst he was in and Robert had knocked it back, they asked me, took me upstairs and said, would you like to go back to Dundee on loan for a year? And I had no idea about what that meant. So when I found out that I could go back to my old club and get playing again, and Jockey was a reasonably big fan of myself, I said yes. So I went up and signed for Dundee, and then I get the phone call. 2 days later, I was in my old landlady. I went back to my old digs in Dundee, and I was ready to make my debut for Dundee against St Mirren in the League Cup. And I got a phone call in the afternoon from Walter Smith on the day of the game, and he says, Fergie, how are you doing? I said, I'm okay, Walter. How about yourself? He says, listen, we've had a bid for you and we've agreed terms. We would like you to go and talk to this club. I says, who is it? He says, United. I says, what, Man United? He says, no, Dundee United. I went, you're having a laugh. So at the time, I had no inclination of signing for Dundee United. But after due course, I went back on loan to Dundee, scored 2 goals in 2 games. I actually knocked Jim McLean back twice and said I wouldn't sign. And eventually, I get pulled back to Rangers because I scored 2 goals in 2 games. I think Rangers had played the first game against Hibs and drawn that game and drew with somebody else. And I don't know if it was a bit of petulism in their part, but they said, well, if you're not going to sign for Dundee United, you can just come back to us. So I went, okay. So I turned up for training at Ibrox in the Monday morning and soon realised that I was getting nowhere near the first team, nowhere near getting back into the team. And that's when I decided reasonably quickly that Dundee United would be a good move. So as it happens, it turned out to be a really good move.
It must have been an incredible time to play. When we mentioned provincial clubs, having that sort of success and beating the giants of European football and coming so agonisingly close to bringing that trophy back to Dundee, the excitement must have been unparalleled.
Well, I mean, I don't have too many regrets in my football career. I always look back and think decision-making could have been a wee bit better. Maybe my desire to play week in, week out made me move about and maybe fall out with a few managers along my way. But that was just my personality, my character. But I do look at the success that we had with Dundee United without winning a trophy. I played in two Scottish Cup finals in 2 years and a UEFA Cup final in the first year. And in my humble opinion, I had a goal chopped off against St Mirren in that League Cup final, which was proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that it was the wrong decision. And my namesake, the other Ian Ferguson, went up the park and scored for St Mirren. I think if we'd have won the Scottish Cup, there would have been a much better opportunity or a chance that we would have put up a better show in the UEFA Cup. We were kind of deflated and the whole place went down a notch, which was very unlike them. But I think in total, I don't know the stats, but somebody told me before, I think we played 74 games that year and the majority of the team played most of the games. So I listen to players moaning now about playing two games a week now and again. You go, well, that's what comes with being successful. And that's what came with Dundee United for us being successful. And it caught with us near the end. I think we just ran out of legs. And I think Gothenburg, who we played in the final, they were at the beginning of their season and we were at the tail end of ours. So I think that kind of paid the price of a very successful campaign. Semi-final of the Scold Cup, third in the league, I think we finished, and final of the Scottish Cup and final of the UEFA Cup. So it was a very a busy time and a lot of games. Enjoyed my time at Dundee United immensely and managed to make my mark there with big goals and big games, quarter final against Barcelona and semi final against Borussia Mönchengladbach. I managed to score in both of them. So good times. Yeah.
And of course it was your first opportunity to work under one of the McLean brothers and Jim McLean, a legendary boss in the Scottish game. What was your experience of Jim?
Well, you've only got 45 minutes here, so I need to cut this one very short. I mean, Jim was a different animal to Tommy. Jim, when I first saw Jim in action, I could go through the long-winded when I said no to signing and then blah, blah, blah. He convinced me to sign. And he told me when I signed, he says, you'll find that I'll be your biggest problem because I'm a perfectionist and I demand perfection from my team, my players. I want them to follow instruction, and then I get frustrated at times and I kind of voice that after the game. So I'd had the experience of Jock Wallace, God rest him, Archie Knox for a wee while. Very tempestuous people and very loud, and they would let you know in no uncertain terms what they thought. But I hadn't really seen anything until I saw Wee Jim. Wee Jim was a fantastic football coach, a great coach, he taught me more about my positional play than I'd actually learned from the start of my career. He made everything so good in training, and everything was related to how you were going to play in the match on the Saturday. And beyond a shadow of a doubt, he was way ahead of his time. Alongside Alec Ferguson, I think both of them, they flew the flag for Scotland, and basically a coaching capacity, they were way beyond their time. But he had a temper, and his temper was phenomenal. I mean, and no one missed out, wouldn't matter who it was. I do pay him the biggest compliment. I'll keep this short. I used to talk back, and I would answer most managers I played with. And I've said about Jim McLean, the biggest compliment I can pay him is that I never answered him back in the 2 years I was there. And people will ask me, why were you scared? I says, no, unfortunately, he was always right. So there was nothing much you could say. He would pinpoint things, and just his delivery was a joy to behold. But he certainly was a perfectionist to me. He was a fantastic coach.
You've mentioned, or Europe has come up a couple of times already, but your kind of exploits didn't end there. Your time at Tynecastle is kind of remembered, particularly for the goal against Bayern Munich.
Yeah,
must have been quite a moment in your career, that particular goal. How was that in your kind of career in general at Tynecastle?
I mean, again, I'll go back to the fact that I probably moved about a wee bit too much. I was trying to make a move from Dundee United, where I'd been back. I think I scored close on 50 goals in two seasons. And I was looking for a move down south. I fancied maybe trying my luck in England, but there was a couple of bits of interest. I think Notts Forest were interested at the time. And I got a phone call. I had an agent at the time, Bill McMurdo, and he told me that Hearts wanted to sign me. And to be honest, at the time, I thought, well, why would I move to Hearts? And I went to meet Ali McDonald and Sandy Jardine, and again, I was convinced that it was a positive move, and the financial aspect, it played a wee part in it as well. They offered me a good deal, and I went to Tynecastle to replace John Robertson, who had went to Newcastle. And wee Robbo, to this day, is a friend, a lovely wee guy, great, great goal scorer for Hearts, and epitomised the way that you should play for Hearts. And he went away, and I joined and started very well, and was sitting top scorer on the league, I think, and Robbo, after 3 months, hadn't really hit it off at Newcastle. So they offered him back, and I think they'd paid $250,000 up front for him, and they owed Hearts $500,000. So they said, do you want him back? And we'll just say that you bought him back for $500,000. So I became surplus to the requirements. But I hung in there, and I think I scored in Robbo's debut against Rangers. Believe it or not, we beat them, and I came on and scored the winner. And the fans were always really good to me at Tynecastle. I still go back to this day, and I got a very, very warm welcome every time I step through the door. It's a great place to go back and visit. But they voted my goal against Bayern Munich as the best ever European goal for Hearts. So I do put pride in the fact that I made my mark on most of the places that I played, and I left something for everybody to look at when I stopped playing. And I wasn't everybody's cup of tea as a football player, but history doesn't lie. And certainly, if you know how to put the ball in the back of the net, then no one can take that away from you. I'm near coming up for 59 now, and it doesn't matter how long ago it was, I still scored the only goal against Bayern Munich, and we beat them 1-0 at Tynecastle. So it was a fantastic experience and a fantastic night to be there. I enjoyed every minute of my time at Hearts as well.
We'll push on and we'll move towards your spell at Motherwell. You had loan spells at Charlton and Bristol, but you joined Motherwell in December 1990. We quite often reminisce about the Cup victory in 1991. Andy, 31 years ago, £100,000 were paid for you, and it's a transfer fee again that Motherwell could only dream of paying, and it quickly made an impression. Yeah.
Well, I mean, again, that was me going back full circle, if you remember at the beginning. I played before Pat Boys Club. I didn't have the opportunity to sign for Motherwell as a kid. I'd went full circle. I'd gained a lot of experience with a lot of teams. And I thought, obviously, I'd experienced Jim McLean, so I was now going to experience his brother. And when I signed there, I thought, this will be my last move. I had a house in Uddingston. I'd settled, been there for a while, thought, well, it's actually closer to my new club than it was to Hearts. I'd stayed in Uddingston when I played with Hearts, and I thought, well, this will be my last move. But unfortunately, again, I don't blame anybody else. I always look at myself in the mirror and go, well, I could have handled things differently with wee Tommy, but he was a different kind of animal to Jim. When I said that I didn't argue with Jim because he was always right, let's just say I had plenty of arguments with Tommy. because I didn't think he was right all the time. So, unfortunately, things started well. Things started good, and I was back playing with Davey Cooper, Craig Patterson, Bobby Russell, players like that I'd known already. But again, I had the great luck to play with the rest of the boys in that team. Luke Nyholt came from Holland, fantastic footballer, lovely boy. Big Chris McCart, Ian Angus, who was a much-travelled player at the time, played in midfield, played with Aberdeen, the Cup Winners' Cup, and brought a lot of experience to the team. Colin O'Neill, who was a mad, crazy Irishman. Big Stevie Kirk, who couldn't stop scoring goals when he was on the bench. Dougie Arnott, who I tell everybody, wee Dougie was so underrated. I thought he was a fantastic player for Murrow right through his career, and he was a joy to play with. Me and him played very well together. And I loved playing up front with Dougie, and we kind of worked well together. And obviously, you've young Phil O'Donnell. I mean, young Phil was a fantastic player, and I was lucky enough to see him break into the team and be there for a couple of years, hopefully to give him some sort of advice about bigger games or what to do. And he turned into a fantastic man, a fantastic player. And he's sadly missed, but great to play with all these boys, the Jim Griffins as well, Ali Maxwell. I wouldn't miss anybody out, every one of these boys. And we had a full squad that year that won the Cup, Nick Cusack and John Philbin, who didn't make the final Cup for the final. Again, there was a lot of boys there who contributed towards my local team growing up in the Murrow area, winning a major trophy, as in the Scottish Cup. And we did it the hard way. We didn't do it by easy measures. We took Celtic to a replay at Hampden, and no one gave us a chance after we didn't win the first one. And we managed to come through that as well, beat Morton and Pentleys, beat a good Falkirk team as well on the way there. So we fully deserved to be in the final. And I think, again, it was a great experience to go and play in a major cup final with a provincial team, especially a team that where I grew up and played with the boys club.
How did that kind of compare? In terms of the achievement of winning the cup compared to perhaps winning the League Cup with Rangers, which would be perhaps arguably more expected than the Motherwell winning a trophy, or some of the kind of achievements that you've discussed earlier, like getting to the UEFA Cup final. How does the cup win with Motherwell rank in that kind of list?
Well, I think there's an easy way to describe it. I would like to class myself as a winner. I was a winner. I didn't like getting beat. Didn't like to get to two Scottish Cup finals with Dundee United and lose both of them. I couldn't understand why we couldn't win the Cup when we got so far and got to a final. I'd already experienced at a very early age winning the Cup with Rangers. And as you quite rightly say, it was expected. But sometimes that can be a wee bit pressurised as well, if you know what I mean, because the expectation level of the fans at Rangers and Celtic as well would be that their team should win everything. So it was expected, and we managed to do it, and I was lucky enough to be involved in that. In comparison to winning it with Motherwell, then again, I'd had the experience of losing three cup finals with Dundee United, and as luck would have it, on that day the team that I was playing against was Dundee United. Now, if you think about the League Cup that I won with Rangers, we beat Dundee United. We beat Dundee United with Motherwell in the Scottish Cup, and I lost two cup finals with Dundee United. So they've come into that equation there not in a very good light. Dundee United should have done a lot better, and especially under Jim McLean, should have won a lot more. But the day I walked off with my winner's medal in the Scottish Cup with Motherwell, it left me a wee bit sad at the end of the game, going round about picking up some of my ex-teammates, because I knew exactly how they felt, and it's a horrible, horrible place to be. But I had to take out the emotional side of having played with these players and take the celebration at my age. I think I was 31 or whatever, I don't know what age I was at that time, coming to the end of my career as such, and to be lucky enough to play with my local team, go to Hampden with a full house, and everybody that had ever supported Motherwell went to the game, I think. just a fantastic experience to be able to do that. We are a provincial team and a local team. It was beyond belief, really. We had an open-top bus through Motherwell and Wishaw, and people that I hadn't seen since school days were out on the streets waving at the... and we never... You would never had the opportunity to do that with Rangers or Celtic. So, a great experience, and there's loads of things that... I think back 30 years, we Andy Russell, who was the groundsman, who was at the boys' club when I was there. Now, Andy, when I signed for Motherwell, he remembered me for the boys' club. And the wee man was a fantastic, fantastic Motherwell fan and a character. And the one thing I always remember is he stood on that bus and said it was the best day of his life. And you know what? That made that, I think that made all the players appreciate just exactly what we had just done for a guy who'd probably watched Motherwell all his life and never experienced them winning anything. So it was something that I'll never forget, and something that I always appreciate how lucky I was that we managed to get to cup finals and managed to get... I've got a couple of medals sitting somewhere, I don't know where they are, but lucky enough to be able to say that I won both the League Cup and the Scottish Cup in Scotland. So, yeah.
The build-up to the final after beating Celtic 4-2 in the semi-final replay, there's then the Rangers game at Fir Park where they're hunting down the league title and come up 3-0 with a 3-0 defeat at Fir Park. Was the belief just flowing through that team at the time that whoever came up against them, they were going to come out on the winning side regardless?
Again, I'll go back to the fact of the winning thing, the winning mentality. I can tell you something that happened that day. Me, I played against Rangers that day, and we Dougie Arnott, I think, scored a couple. And to be honest, Rangers battered us that day. Really, they were all over. Just couldn't get the ball in the net. And we've managed to get 3 goals. And again, you get into a really good habit of winning. When we get into that habit of winning, it's a good habit to be in. And it's the same as you get into one that you start losing. Kind of goes the same way. But I do remember vividly doing the warm-up for that game, and the place was jam-packed with Rangers fans. They had the party balloons and the streamers and everything else that was going to be happening. They thought they were coming to win the league that day. And I remember a few people I recognised in the corner during the warm-up, they're shouting over to me and stuff, we're going to win the league today, and I'm not any bother. And we went in for the before the start of the game. The Davy Cooper came into the dressing room, and he said in the dressing room, he said, listen, he said, there's a few of us in here who played for them next door. He says, they think they're here to win the league today, but they ain't winning it today. They can win it next week if they want. He said, but they're not winning it today. That was the team talk. Tommy McLean did not have to say a word. So that was the mentality that we had at the time. Coop just uttered those words out of his mouth. Die hard and died in the wool Rangers fan who we were playing against them. It was our duty that day to make sure that they didn't win it against us. They could go and win it the following week against Aberdeen or whatever they wanted to do. But it was a great victory. And again, Rangers fans went home with a tail between their legs. But it was a great build-up for us going into the cup final to go and beat the eventual champions of Scotland that year, 3-0 on the way to the cup final.
As fantastic as the cup win was for Motherwell, for everybody connected to the club, we've had the kind of pleasure of hearing the players talk about the occasion, you know, quite a lot over the intervening years. But from what I've heard you say before, there was also the kind of a personal frustration that day about your kind of substitution, and I've kind of heard you remark upon it as being perhaps the moment that you're the beginning of the end almost, despite it being arguably the high point of your Motherwell career. Would that be fair to say?
Oh no, I think it's well documented, and anytime anybody's asked me, I tell the truth. I tell exactly how it is. The night before the game, we were in a hotel in Irvine, and Tommy McLean came down. His father had passed away, and him and Jim, we obviously had the loss of their father before the game. And he came to the hotel that night, and he took us all in for a team talk. and he named every position apart from me. Now, he's told me through this, corners, free kicks, do this. Well, you'll be doing this, Phil. You'll be doing this, Coop, Craig. You'll be doing this. So everybody was more or less mentioned apart from myself and Stevie Kirk. So just at the end of the meeting, he pulled me. He says, Fergie, can you just stay behind? I went, I ain't bother. So he said, listen, I've got a decision to make. He says, I'm either going to start with you and put Kirky on, or I'll start with Kirky and put you on. And I said, well, is it multiple choice? He said that. I said, well, start with me and let's see how things go. So that's, he said, okay. And I thought myself, well, I've got the experience of playing in cup finals and European and stuff. And it's probably going to be Motherwell's biggest opportunity to win something at Hampden. I think if you look back to all the things you've asked me about my career, the one thing I was reasonably good at was when you needed a goal on a big occasion and it was an important game, I think I stood up to the mark, and nine times out of ten, I would produce that for you. So I was surprised that he would even say that to me before he named the team. So the game started, and I've obviously thought I was having a reasonably good game. Scored the opening goal, we won nothing at half time, and as soon as Dundee United equalised, I think about 5-10 minutes into the second half, or 15 minutes into the second half, I couldn't tell you the time. I was away at the far end, and Maurice Malpass, who I was playing against that day, I looked over and I said, if that's my number going up, I'm going to go mental. And he went, oh, is your number? I'm like, yeah. and lo and behold, it was. So needless to say, when I went into the dugout, me and Tommy had a few choice words to say to each other. And I did, I think I went inside. I was that disgusted with him. I went inside and had a cup of tea. And by the time I came back out, I think it was 3-2, something like that. So put a bit of a dampener on it. And I genuinely don't think I ever, myself and Tommy, never recovered from that decision that he made. And I took it personally and decided, no, I'm not putting up with this, because I had moved about. And as I said, there was managers who would play me every week. And then I would make the decision to move for whatever reason. And I would go to another club and the manager wouldn't play me, or he bought me under false pretenses and played me for a short period of time and then left me out. So frustration, anger, and probably a wee bit of experience at the time. I should have shut up and just took the decision and sat down like everybody else. I may have lasted a wee bit longer in the team, but unfortunately we all have our own character and our own way of doing things. And that was mine, unfortunately, for me. So it was the beginning of the end of my relationship with Tommy as a player and a manager. But I was at the club for at least another couple of seasons, I think, before eventually I moved on again.
We've talked about the 120 minutes in the park and some of the celebrations afterwards. I've seen you've been quoted in talking about reminiscing that you and David Cooper ended up going out for a meal at a restaurant that Coop always went to after the game, because Mother had no set plan for after the match.
Well, they didn't. That's true. I mean, myself and Coop, we went back to Fir Park, obviously. We had a celebration with the players after the game, and we had one or two drinks on the way back there. Went back to Fir Park, and they took us into the main stand and let the fans come in onto the pitch at Fir Park, and we had a celebration with all the players and the fans in there. But both, I was married at the time and Coop's girlfriend at the time, we used to socialise anyway. We'd go out maybe the odd Saturday if we'd go for a meal and stuff to the Santa Lucia in Hamilton. And I think it got to a certain time and Coop was probably hungry. And he says, Fergie, do you mind if I just go to Santa Lucia? I said, do what you want. So we jumped in a taxi and the four of us ended up in the Santa Lucia having a meal. We were Motherwell Blazers on, having just won the Scottish Cup. So, Davey was a creature of habit. Anybody that knew him, he had a very routine life with the bookies, and he went to Santa Lucia, I think probably 5 out of 7 nights of the week, and they loved him in there. And we had a kind of mini celebration. I mean, don't get me wrong, the following day, we ended up back at Fir Park and went round in the open top bus and stuff. So there was celebrations to be had, but the night of the game when we won, we did end up going for a bite to eat and a couple of drinks to the Santa Lucia, which we'd probably do every Saturday night.
Was that perhaps when the enormity of the achievement hit home, when you see the Motherwell fans lining the streets of Lanarkshire and people coming out of all ages? It just meant so much to them.
Oh, no, it was great. I grew up in Muir Hill. I was born, myself and Gary McAllister went to Keir Hardy. Braithurst High, we both played for the boys' club. And again, I was back on an open-top bus going up through Motherwell, Wishaw, down to Forgewood, where I used to go to school, in an open-top bus, and there was Motherwell fans lined the streets everywhere. And I think not just Motherwell fans, I think even the fans of other teams would come out and give us a wee clap, because, again, Motherwell at that time, the Ravenscraig was closing down, there was a lot of unemployment, a lot of sadness round about the area at the time. And I think the Scottish Cup victory and the way we handled it and the way we represented the town, it caught the imagination of everybody. And I think they came out to applaud, not just from a Motherwell FC background. I would say that the whole Lanarkshire came out and gave us a bit of a round of applause, because as such a small club on a small budget, we'd managed to actually win the Scottish Cup. So it was great to be part of, and great celebrations. And again, these are the things that stick in my mind, being a local boy. Never seen that in my lifetime, that a football team would be going out in an open-top bus and parading a Scottish Cup. So good to be involved in.
And of course, there's so many fantastic memories. It'd be remiss of us to miss out the fact that, sadly, we discussed this 30 years removed from lifting the cup, and likes of Phil, Jamie Dolan, David Cooper, Paul McGrillen, also sadly no longer with us. It's tragic to look back on, but these guys will forever be heroes of Motherwell Football Club and the wider Scottish football community as well, because each and every one of these individuals served various clubs magnificently during their careers.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's very sad that four of the squad, the players, are no longer with us, and we can include Big Tam in that as well now, the coach. So every time we get together, it's very poignant. Obviously, the Coop and Phil were a wee bit more high profile, going to Rangers and Celtic connections as well. But young Paul McGrillen was an infectious character, loved to be boy to death. And I'd like to think that when I went to Motherwell, he was a striker, that I managed to pass on a few tips to him during his time with me. And I got on really, really well with the young kid. He was infectious. I used to call him a pest. I'm like, you're a pest. Now go away, because I'll end up slapping me. Because he would just be wanting to be up to something all the time. He was always laughing. He was always joking about. Jamie Dolan came from a small village called Salisbury when my father was born. And I used to joke about Jamie. I said, you're called Spider-Man. I've never seen somebody crawl with wee Tommy as much as you. But he took it in jest, and I got on really well with the boy and loved him to death. And a great footballer at the time, who did a job, a very unfashionable job. Jamie would go and win the ball back and give it to other people and not really get too much credit for it. But everybody in the dressing room would appreciate every one of those players' contribution to the cup run and contribution to the club as a whole. And I think they're all sadly, sadly missed, and all died far, far too young. But there's not much we can do about that. We just have to raise a glass every time we're together. We'll always raise a glass to the four of the boys that are not there. And now Big Tom's going to be in that as well. And just a fact of life, it's 30 years since we won the cup and none of us are getting any younger, unfortunately. So we just have to face up to that. But certainly those boys went far too soon, that's for sure.
I mean, look back on some absolutely phenomenal times for the football club. Rightfully, everyone that wore a claret and amber jersey during that season is regarded as a Motherwell legend. Fast forward to the present day, and the club still remain in the top flight of Scottish football. With Kilmarnock's relegation, that kind of takes even one of the closest contenders away. It's only Celtic, Aberdeen and Motherwell that I've had that period of longevity in the top flight. It's a extraordinary achievement for a club that are kind of renowned for punching above their weight, as much as on this podcast we kind of hate that expression, but it is a kind of common trait. They still continue to push for Europe. Last season we played in European football. It's quite a feat.
No, it isn't. I think it's testament to the managers and staff who have come in. Stephen Robinson, who was there for a while, he reminded me a lot of Alan McDonald. The Alan McDonald style of play was kind of, I wouldn't say basic, certainly gave everybody a job, got them really fit. They were very difficult to play against. Pressurised teams into making mistakes, and if they got a chance at their end, you knew you had to put it in the net. Not too dissimilar to the way we played when I was at Motherwell. I mean, you wouldn't expect to go out. The fans wouldn't expect us to win every game. It's a mentality thing again. I'll go back to it. I was listening to Stevie Clark talking about the Scotland team the other night. And I played in the under-18s and under-21s with Stevie. Fantastic player he was when he was at St Mirren before he went to Chelsea. And he said a very interesting thing that I say to everybody. There was not one time in my whole entire football career did I go onto a football pitch not thinking that we were going to win. And that was just right throughout us. There was no way that I would take, that if I was playing with Dundee or playing with Motherwell or Dundee United, that we were going to go and play against Rangers and Celtic and they were going to beat us. Absolutely not. No chance. Every time I took the field, I always had confidence in my ability and my teammates' ability that we would win that game. Wouldn't matter who you were playing against. I think if you look at the things we spoke about earlier and the goals, I was lucky enough to score for Rangers, Dundee United, Hearts, the teams I played with in Europe. You're mentioning Inter Milan, Bayern Munich, Barcelona, Borussia Mönchengladbach. We as Scottish teams beat those teams. So we had the ability and we also had a massive thing that is called being Scottish, that you don't know when you're beat. You should never, ever think that you're going on to a park not to win the game. So it was interesting to hear Stevie saying that the other night, and I think if he takes that into the national side, obviously in the next week or two, that seems to be running through the squad of players just now. They've got confidence back in their own ability, and they've got confidence in the fact that we are Scottish. We can play a certain type of football. It may not always be too pretty on the eye, but it's effective. And if you can do that and you get results on the pitch, everybody will be very, very happy.
Moving towards winding up this podcast, and I'd like to take the opportunity first and foremost, Ian, to thank you for your time tonight. Andy, I've hogged the questions a fair bit here. I know that because I can see them coming through my WhatsApp, there's a few questions you would like to ask Ian about his career and his time at Motherwell. Do you want to finish us up here?
Really just, I mean, Ian's kind of led on to it there himself. It was just in terms of the kind of the current mood in the nation, the excitement that it's building. That was the kind of one thing perhaps in your career that was missing, was a kind of full international cap. I think you had a smattering of under 21 caps if I remember rightly. But how close were you to the kind of full squad, and what are your kind of, you've kind of given us a kind of an insight there of your views and how things will go in the kind of European Championships in the kind of weeks ahead.
Well, I don't know how close I was to getting a cap. I mean, I think, in all honesty, football's all about opinions. I had Andy Roxburgh as my manager from Scotland schoolboys right up to Scotland under-21s. There was one stage where I was the most capped under-21 player. I think Paul McStay, who played underneath me and played in the same teams, eventually beat that. I didn't manage to get into the full squad. Now, whether that was because I moved different clubs, didn't work for me, didn't get a level of consistency together that merited me getting into the squad. It was a very, very competitive squad. If you think about the players that played in my position, Charlie Nicholas, Morris Johnson, Coisty, Andy Gray, Kendall Gleish was still playing at the time. There's a multitude of Merrick Black, Johnny Hewitt, all these boys. I think at the stage when I went back to Dundee United, if things hadn't maybe just been as quiet for me when I played with Rangers in the second year, I hit the ground running with Dundee United, and I get into a team that was playing with a lot of confidence. And I think in the run-up to the UEFA Cup and obviously the Scottish Cup, I mean, I scored important goals. And I think if you can get somebody, if we had somebody in the Scotland team just now, even one, there was loads of players when I played who could do the same as myself. The John Robertsons, I've not mentioned Robbo, the same. I mean, everybody seemed to get, all those players that I played with always seemed to get an opportunity to get in the squad and play, whereas for whatever reason, I didn't. So I don't hold any grudges. I sometimes look back and think, I remember Coop telling me one thing. Me and him used to go for a coffee every morning when we both played at Rangers. I used to take him in. And we used to go to Nico's in Socky Hall Street for a coffee every single morning. And he asked me who Andy Roxer was when he took over the team. He says, this guy's mental. He said, he's having a meeting to tell me when the next meeting is. I'm what he watched the racing on the telly. I said, right, okay. He says, so you see that Scotland team, he said, it's harder to get back out. It's team once you're in it. He says, you can't get back out. So, again, there's loads of different things in times where I thought one Scotland cap would have made probably the highlight of my whole career, because we all wanted to score the goal in a cup final, which I did, play for certain teams, which I did, get international recognition. I got up there on the 21s. I just didn't manage to get even one. One would have done me. One Scottish cap would have probably filled all the boxes, and I'd have been quite happy to let it go at that. But football's a funny thing to do for a living, and it's a very opinionated game, and people will have opinions of how I was as a player and how I wasn't. But I think there was at least one stage where I thought, when I scored 25 goals by Christmas or something for Dundee United, and I thought, I'm not getting into the B team. They had a B game against somebody at Pittodrie, and Andy Walker got in the team. And I think he was playing with Murdo at the time. He'd scored something like 9 goals, and I think I was into about 20, and I didn't get in the squad. So I kind of knew then that I was never going to get one.
So what about the next couple of weeks? There's obviously so much anticipation. We've been so starved of, we've talked about how Motherwell have been starved of cup glory.
Yeah.
There was a documentary on last night about Mr. Brown's boys and the fact that it's 23 years removed from France 98. It's an exciting time for Scottish football.
Oh, it is. Again, I've touched on the subject with Stevie Clark, who I know Stevie well, and I loved what he said about the winning mentality, and not you go on the pitch expecting to win every game. I think he's instilled that in the squad. I think we can look forward to it. My girlfriend is English, so we'll be watching it in the house with Gordon Smith coming round to watch it with me, him and his wife, and there's a couple of other people. So we'll get Gordon to do his half-time summary for us and let us know what he thinks. Know what I mean? But we'll have a good day watching the game. A bit of rivalry between families, but I think we can look forward to a really good tournament. I think everybody's been waiting for this to happen for months. When they got announced that Scotland play England in a major tournament again, it just whets the appetite for the days gone past where we used to compete at a good level, and everybody used to look forward to these games. Scotland are always the underdogs, always have been, always will be. But it's the best way to go into some things. And we were in as underdogs on many occasions and came out the other end as winners. So we've got to hope that they've got 3 games to play in the group stages and get enough points to get through that. That would be a massive achievement for them. But again, it's cup football. You just don't know. If they turn up on the day and they handle the occasion, I'm quite sure they'll do the country proud. And I'm reasonably confident that they won't be embarrassed. They'll put up a good showing, and hopefully with a bit of luck, they'll qualify out the group. But who knows?
I totally agree, and the excitement levels are building. Ian, again, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you tonight.
No, you're welcome. Listen, I enjoy I don't talk about football, my football career much. I do the odd Q&A when I'm asked to do things. And as I said, I'm doing that hospitality job at Rangers. So it's only over the last two or three years that I've actually started talking to people about it, because I was too busy doing other things. So it's good to reminisce, and especially the good times. I'm going to give you a bit of trivia for the Murrow fans. I remember scoring 10 goals in a pre-season game and I get dropped for the next game. How's that? Look it up.
Andy, you need to help me out here, pal.
Look it up. We played
against sad, I think. Was it against Motherwell's Twin Town or something?
It was a pre-season game in Germany. It was a pre-season game in Germany and we won 10-0. And I scored all 10 goals. And we played against PSV Eindhoven or something a couple of days later, and I was on the bench. And no disrespect, we Joe McLeod, love it. Joe was up front and I'm thinking, I've just scored 10 goals and I can't get a game here. What's the story? You know what I mean? But hey ho.
Andy, thanks very much for your time, mate.
All right, guys. Listen, it's a pleasure.
Thank you. Great listening to you. Thank you.
All the best, guys.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back in the next couple of weeks. Until then, thank you. Goodbye.
But can David Marshall keep him out? Aleksandar Mitrovic has to score for Serbia. And Marshall has saved! Yes! One big yes! It's a happy ending! The time has come! The time really has come! Scotland will be part of Euro 2020!